RPN is not responsible for the views, actions, statements, or opinions of its guests, advertisers, or even its viewers. The information contained in this program is not to be confused with medical or legal advice. An appearance on this platform is not necessarily an endorsement, but as always, we encourage you to do your own research. Enjoy the show. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Red Pill News Live. Thank you so much to Miller Biz, who says Red Pill 78 News is therapeutic. I'm certainly grateful to be bringing you guys therapy in the form of news and information. Thank you so much, Miller Biz. I've also got a very special photograph I want to show you guys from my friend David in Amsterdam. He sent this a couple of weeks ago, and I just kept neglecting to get it onto my computer, but it's pretty sweet. Very cool. Well, I asked ChatGPT to produce an image of an average New York City juror, and this is what they came up with. And it's so funny because Alvin Bragg and Judge Marchand are doing everything they can to make sure that the deck is stacked against President Trump. But President Trump doesn't seem to be worried, and neither am I. I mean, he is literally daring them to put him in jail. All of this is going to get appealed. It's going to go away. The quicker we get it over with, the better. So we can get back out there on the campaign trail. Continue doing rallies, continue riling up the troops, getting people jazzed and ready for Election Day, November 5th, 2024. Until that time, sit back, relax, and grab your popcorn. We're going to be right back after this. Just like groceries, gas, and food, our energy bills are expected to keep hitting record highs in the coming months, too. You see, these power bills have gotten so expensive for the average American that a record number, 20 million households, are now behind on their power bills. And some power companies have a shocking $13 million in uncollected bills because the average American household simply cannot afford the rising costs of electricity in Joe Biden's America. And the greedy power companies, well, they're not showing any signs of lowering costs either. Which is why I have been lowering my energy bills thanks to this amazing little device that I absolutely love. I want to slash my power bills. I want to beat the greedy energy companies. I want to show Joe Biden that he's not going to break me. And I want to keep more money in my pocket every single month. This little gadget that plugs into the wall outlet is designed to stop your home from wasting unnecessary electricity, reducing your home's energy usage, extending the lifespan of appliances, ensuring a consistent and safe flow of electricity to your home, and so much more. Be sure to use my link in the description below to get a 60-day risk-free trial. Also, you're going to get 65% off and free shipping. It's included completely complimentary with every single purchase. There are many other free bonuses, but you got to get in there and get them before they sell out. So go to the link in the description below this video. Don'tWastePower.com. Once again, that's Don'tWastePower.com. It's for my subscribers exclusively. Don'tWastePower.com. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us. If you haven't yet, please consider hitting that like button. It's the easiest way and the freest way that you can help support the channel. The number of likes that we get on each stream is going to decide whether or not we can get this show up there on the leaderboard. And obviously, if we get on the leaderboard, then more people are going to see the program. I know most people don't even get notifications when the show goes live. There's probably another 10% who get notifications when I publish the stream, and then they get annoyed because they don't know what time the show starts. So let me tell you this. I've been putting a placeholder video on every single stream, and it will give you all of the information you need to know if you're new here or if you're not certain about what my schedule is. But take note, I'm going to tell you right now, Monday through Thursday, every day at 5 p.m. Eastern, without fail, I will go live. I'm actually going live at 4:55 so that it does maybe have an opportunity to send a notification out. Of course, we've got the countdown, we've got the dancing Trumps, and we've got everybody getting jazzed up in the chat and getting ready for today's news and information. But if you don't have a pencil and you don't have time to write down the schedule, you can take a look at the thumbnail for every single show. It will give you the date and time that the show is going to start. Without fail, it will be in one of the three corners, not the upper right-hand corner, because that's where my logo's at. But if you take a look at the thumbnail, it'll tell you. Also, Rumble gives you a time underneath the description of the video. It's not under the description. It's just above the description, just below the information it has about locals. So it's like the title of the video, the name of the channel, and all of the different icons to share and unfollow and subscribe. Make sure you're subscribed if you haven't yet. Just below that, it says something about locals. And then just below that, it gives you the time. And it actually does a countdown to let you know what time the show is going to start. So if nothing else, remember, Monday through Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on Red Pill News with myself, Zach Payne, on this channel, Red Pill 78 News. Now, you can also watch me on Fridays and Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 to 11. We have a call-in show. It's a totally different format, so it's a different vibe, but it's always a lot of fun. I have great conversations with people that sometimes I really enjoy speaking with. Other times I don't necessarily enjoy speaking with them as much, but I still have the conversations because I think it's important in today's divided world. And then occasionally there will be other impromptu streams. If you don't know when those are going to be, it's probably because you're not following me on social media. But if you're following me on Gab, Getter, X, Telegram, Truth Social, any of those, then you will get notifications. If you follow me and click the notification bell, then you'll be able to get notifications when I send it out. But every single day I post exactly when I'm going live. I put out a Telegram post when I'm going live. I make the shows a couple of hours ahead of time. Today I actually forgot to share them on social media until like 4:30. So that's my bad. But either way, you guys, let me show you this awesome picture. My friend David, who lives in Amsterdam, he and a friend of his were out at a protest in Amsterdam very recently, and they made this sign and they were showing it off. And I guess that there were a ton of people who watch this show in Amsterdam, and they were walking up to him and saying, you know, hey, I know Red Pill. I watch Red Pill 78. Zach's awesome, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, I just thought it was super cool to know that I have people who are watching the show in other countries. Thank you, number one Indiana dad. I really, really appreciate the support. But yeah, I thought that this was really cool, and I wanted to give David a big shout out and say thank you very, very much. Miracle Girly, thank you so much. Look at that, $100. She says, consider it back pay. Miracle Girly, it is so good to see you out there in the chat. Miracle Girly is an old friend from way back in the day. So good to see you. But yes, I thought that you guys were going to get a kick out of this. This is David over here on the left wearing the sunglasses, and I guess that's like a scarf or something like that. But David, I wanted to say thank you very much. Now, he also sent me a heart-wrenching video just before the show went on. I watched it. I guess that his family dog, they lost her a couple of months ago, it looks like, maybe, or maybe it was just recently. I didn't see a date, but from what he said in the video, it sounded like they lost her around Christmas time, and it just broke my heart. You know, I mean, Lisa and I are always talking about what are we going to do when the dogs are gone, and it's just like the thing that I don't want to think about, but unfortunately, it is something that you have to consider. And considering the fact that, you know, there's only a couple of things in life that are certain. You're born, you die, you're going to pay taxes. Pretty much all those three. You have to make the most of the time that you have because you never know when that time is going to end. So my message here simply is the people that are in your life, make sure you tell them that you love them. If you have animals, be good to them because they love you. And if it wasn't for you, they wouldn't survive. So they give us so much. They give us every single part of themselves, and they are so loyal, and they just – all they want to do is be around us. They just want to be around us. Chi-Chi will follow us all around the house. Muffin's a little bit more independent. But Cisco, like, you know, I'm always telling Lisa, he's a pack animal. You know, he wants to be where the pack is. He's coming into my office. He's following her around as she's cleaning the house. And it's obvious that the animals love us. And Smokey, too. Even Smokey's a cat, if you don't know. And she is a pretty awesome cat as well. So love your animals, love your family, love your friends, and love everybody, I guess. Really, that's it. So let's begin here today, guys, with kind of a funny story. You know, it seems like the mainstream media, the fake news mainstream media, they're having a bit of a, I don't know, a crisis of conscience, or perhaps a crisis of confidence, it might be. Apparently, there was a story, or rather a series of stories. They were published on March 27th. And they were in different news outlets, but they were literally published on the same day. There was a story from CBS News where they headlined the story, "The Earth is Spinning Faster Than It Used to. Clocks Might Have to Skip a Second to Keep Up." All right, so that's one story, and I'll give you one guess as to why they say the Earth is spinning faster. It's climate change, just like that earthquake in New Jersey. When are the climate devils going to leave us alone? For the first time in history, world timekeepers may have to consider subtracting a second from our clocks in a few years because the planet is rotating a tad faster than it used to. Clocks may have to skip a second, called a negative leap second, around 2029. This is coming from a study in the journal Nature. Now, if we subtract a second, do we get less sleep, or do we get more sleep, or are we even going to notice? Like, honestly, is it really anything to think about? If it's only 1 second per year, it would take, you know, 365 years to notice 365 seconds, which would be a couple of hours, but even still. So the reason the Earth is spinning faster, they say, is because ice is melting at both of the poles, and that has been counteracting the planet's burst of speed, and likely it's delayed this global second of reckoning by several years. If the ice caps, I guess, if the ice caps stay frozen, then the Earth will keep spinning at the same speed, but because even though there's the same amount of weight, you know what? Even though there's probably a lot more weight, because like they're making things out of, like, you know, chemicals and stuff like that. They're making plastics. I'm sure there's lots of weighted plastics. There's also all kinds of metals and minerals and precious items that are taken out of the ground, and that's got to disturb the weight. So I think this is BS, to be quite honest with you. But this is the funny part. If you headed over to NBC News on the same day, their science story said that the melting polar ice is actually slowing the Earth's rotation. And that, of course, also has possible consequences for timekeeping. The only thing is, NBC believes that because the Earth is slowing down, we're actually going to get more time. I actually kind of like the NBC story just a little bit more. Global warming, once again, the climate devil's coming back to get us, has slightly slowed the Earth's rotation, and it could affect how we measure time, warns NBC. A study found that the melting of polar ice, an accelerating trend driven primarily by human-caused climate change, has caused the Earth to spin less quickly than it would otherwise. Well, where are they actually getting this information? And who is correct, if either one of them is even correct? But at the same time, you could also consider this to be a canceling out of each other. If CBS is wrong and NBC is wrong, then the Earth is just spinning at the same speed and we got nothing to worry about. If CBS is right and NBC News is wrong, well, then the Earth is still spinning at the same freaking speed and we've got nothing to worry about. Now, this is something you would expect to see on, I don't know, the Babylon Bee. However, it's not on the Babylon Bee. This is what passes for mainstream media news nowadays. Jim Kyle, he says, who the hell is funding? That's my question, Jim. That was the next question I was going to ask. Do we actually have two separate studies that studied the exact same phenomenon and came up with the exact opposite conclusion? How many millions of dollars was wasted on this? I tend to believe that this is just another example of some globalist grifting where they have set up these studies and they pump a bunch of money in. And then at the end of the day, they say, you know what sounds good? Let's just tell everybody that the Earth is getting faster. Let's tell them it's getting faster. Why? Why, Jim? Because global warming. Why else? And then the other people are like, let's just tell them it's getting slower. Yeah, why not? What are they going to know? It's only a second slower. But why? Why are we going to tell them it's getting slower? Well, global warming, of course. Ba-dum-bum. And there you go. That's how you get to where we are today. And I just have a really, really great time coming in, looking at the news every single day and picking apart how much fake news is out there for us. I mean, we had the Russia hoax. We had the Jesse Smollett hoax. We had the Covington kids hoax. We had the Very Fine People hoax. We had recently another hoax. Dang it, I forgot which one that was. Anyways, there was another one that they tried to pin on Donald Trump. It was the Fine People hoax part two. But anyways, neither here nor there. The moral of the story is that the news might be real, but the people delivering it are fake. And in this case, they're both fake. The news is fake and the people delivering it are also fake. So let's go ahead and move on. Are you a resident of Colorado? Any residents of Colorado out there? Yes. No one can detect what the weight is. But here's the thing. Even if the polar ice caps are melting, here's the thing. I believe in climate change. I'm gonna blow your lid off right here. I believe in climate change. I believe in natural cycles of the earth. I believe that the earth has a cyclical nature to the way that the climate changes, to the way that the seasons change, to the way that the earth moves, to the way that the earth warms or cools. Now, you know why I believe that? Because we can look back and there have been ice ages. Okay, we've had floods. We've had periods of intense heat. We've had periods of intense cooling. It's quite obvious. If you look at the nature of certain continents, like the Sahara Desert, used to be I think there was a sea. There was also a big, lush greenscape. Things have been very different at different times in the Earth's history. You go up to the Arctic, you go to the Antarctic, you know, it was also warm there at one time. Maybe the polar ice caps were on, like, the sides of the Earth. Who knows? But the one thing I can tell you is that man is not changing the climate. We may be poisoning and polluting the earth. I mean, I believe that 100%. But man-made climate change is a hoax. And you can take a look at the faked data from the NOAA emails. I'm sure you guys have seen that. I've talked about that before. It was years ago. But, I mean, they faked the data. All right? They did it so that they could pretend that the earth was getting warmer. So that they could scare you. And so that they could take your money and make you feel like you have to do something about it. I'll tell you what, though. The United States is doing a lot better. Hang on, I got to fix this camera. The United States is doing a lot better at keeping the earth clean than many other countries, such as China. China's one of the worst polluters in the entire world. India is another big polluter. You know, some of the African nations, I mean, geez, oh, Pete, you don't want to go to their beaches. I'll tell you that. Any of those third world nations, if they've got like a river running through their town, it's probably an open sewer and there's a lot of trash in there. You don't want to drink the water. You don't want to step in a puddle. You might get cholera. We got it pretty good here in the United States. It's pretty clean. So for them to tell us that we need to change our behavior when we've already changed our behavior is completely ridiculous. If they want to solve any type of pollution, I'm down with that. But let's go to the sources of pollution. All right. Do we have any Colorado? Yes, Cherokee. The poles have been shifting for a while. I mean, this is another natural thing. You know, the magnetic fields of the earth, they're constantly in flux. And who knows? Maybe at some point the poles will completely flip. North will become south, south will become north, and at that time, maybe the entire world will just tear apart, and then we won't even be here anymore, and we won't have to worry about it. Anybody here from Colorado? Yes, the Adam and Eve story. Yes, I've got a copy of it. I've got a copy before the CIA redactions, and then I've also got the CIA redacted version. All right, well, the reason I ask is because the Colorado House Democrats just passed a bill which bans AR-15s and 9mm with a threaded barrel. So this gun is illegal in the state of Colorado. And I am the owner of an NFA stamped and fully registered suppressor. So don't anybody worry. This gun is legal. I just thought it would be funny to show you a very common style of gun, which is now completely banned in the state of Colorado. AR-15s, obviously, this is a broad category, too. I mean, this is any of the rifles that you can get, which are customizable, that take the same type of parts. They want you to believe it's a weapon of war. But really, all it is just a fun thing to do on the weekends. And of course, they're a lot of fun to shoot, of course. Now, I'm hoping that this does not last, because depending on how this law is written, it may make, I don't know, 60 to 80% of the state of Colorado out of compliance with this law overnight. So they've called it an assault weapons ban. This is always what they're trying to do. Don't answer the door, Zach. Might be the ATF. I hope not. Well, you know, I'm always prepared just in case. I've also got cameras all over the place. So if it's the ATF, I'll know. I have a loudspeaker that I can talk to them on. But of course, you know, if the ATF wants in, they're probably just going to smash the door down and then shoot me in the head like the guy at the Bill Clinton airport guy. God forbid, I should not joke about that stuff. All right. So this is HB 24-1292. It has banned AR-15s and certain 9mm pistols. They have to have a threaded barrel and they have to accept a detachable magazine. So moreover, the text of the bill makes it pretty clear that a semi-automatic handgun of any caliber would be banned if it takes a detachable magazine and has a threaded barrel. Now, if I'm not mistaken, like every single 9mm handgun takes a detachable magazine. I mean, they all pop in and pop out. Now, this ban passed the House on Sunday by a vote of 35-27. A Republican state rep by the name of Ken DeGraff argued that the focus should be on ascertaining why people do not value life instead of guns. He said, we should probably get to a point where we look at why communities don't value life. Well, look at the people who are killing people. I mean, obviously, it's crazies. It's people that are having regular communication with the FBI. It's gang members. It's criminals. I mean, those people don't value life because they've been brought up in a society where life has no value. In Colorado, isn't that one of the states where they basically let you kill a baby up until the moment that it's born? I don't know what the date is, but I know that they love abortion in Colorado. Snowcat operator, thank you very, very much. Don't give in, Lisa. Don't give in. Just because we love them, don't give in. So anyways, I would highly suggest that now that you're likely a felon in the state of Colorado, you should probably give your state rep a call and tell them how ridiculous this is. And tell them if they want to value life, let's get rid of abortion in the state of Colorado. Let us also, when you call them, give them some facts and figures. You know, I don't know off the top of my head how many babies are aborted in the state of Colorado every year. But I bet you, I guarantee it's more babies than people who are killed by handguns or AR-15s. And both of those numbers are probably exceedingly low. And I know they got some gang activity in Colorado. I think you should also maybe separate how many people are killed by illegal aliens in the state of Colorado and in states all across America. That might have a little bit of an impact, too. Did you guys hear about that teacher, a Nebraska substitute teacher? She was caught in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m., naked with a teenage boy, a 17-year-old boy on Saturday. When the police rolled up and she and the 17-year-old student were having sex, or, you know, she was abusing this kid in the back of the car. The kid jumped into the driver's seat, drove up onto somebody's lawn, ran out in his underwear, and just took off. I guess she was still in the back seat trying to get dressed. She admitted to what she had done. And, of course, her career, her life, likely her marriage, all of it is over. Also her status as a mother, too. My God. Well, anyways, it turns out that she is the wife of a Harvard-educated deputy at the Department of Defense. Her name is Erin Ward. She's 45 years old. My God, she's my age, and she's now facing charges after allegedly being found naked with a 17-year-old student. Now, not too much alleged about it. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's on body cam from a number of different angles. But this incident is now obviously going to be drawing a little bit of attention to who her husband is. His name is William Douglas Ward. And like I said, he went to Harvard. He's working at the Department of Defense. Douglas is 53 years old. He holds a position as a deputy director of the Commander's Action Group and senior nuclear deterrence advisor at United States Strategic Command in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, he's served since 2005, and his role reportedly involves the critical defense strategies of the United States. The couple lived. I don't know that they're still living together or if she's moved out or if he's moved out, but they're in Gretna, which is just outside of Omaha. And they also have three teenage children, one of whom is around the same age as the student that was involved. Now, the family's involvement in academic and community activities is fairly well documented. They've got an open social media profile, they all do, and well, it's probably locked down by now. I didn't bother to go check, but they had open social Facebook profiles. They talked a lot about what they did for the community, and Erin was frequently a teacher at Omaha Burke High School. This is where she met the student, and the legal age of consent in Nebraska is 16. It's worth saying that. But because it was a student and she was a teacher, there is obviously a bit of a problem there. So Erin has been charged with felony sexual abuse by a school employee. So not statutory rape. This is a charge that carries a potential sentence of up to 20 years in prison still. Cherokee says, please share the unredacted Adam and Eve story. I could never find it. It's a PDF and I would have to find it. I mean, I have to locate it, but I'll see what I can do. All right. So, 20 years in prison she could still get. I hope it was worth it, Erin, although something tells me it wasn't. So she was also discovered naked with a high school student. This was on April 13th, and the Douglas County Sheriff's Office had put the information out there. I guess deputies had been called for a suspicious vehicle, which was at the dead end of a road. The situation, of course, escalated when they were found together. The student drove away pretty hastily. He crashed the car a short distance away. After the arrest, the principal of the high school assured the community that, well, you know, they're committed to the safety of the students. Obviously, we want to make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen again. It seems like it should be exceedingly rare, but it seems also like we continue to have situations like this popping up over and over and over again. He said, we are writing to share that law enforcement has arrested a metro area substitute teacher for inappropriate conduct with a minor. The individual working at Burke High School several days during the 2023-24 school year, they will not be returning to our school district or any others in our district. Obviously, that ought to go without saying. So yesterday it was also announced by the Seattle Police Department. And I'm just going to let that sink in. The Seattle Police Department, who isn't really paying attention to its own criminal situation, but for some reason they are closely monitoring the conflict between Israel and Iran. It seems to me like they have a lot more serious issues that they could be spending their time on. I mean, they've already destabilized the entire Seattle metro area by defunding the police. So why are they looking at what's happening in Israel and monitoring it closely? I mean, it's not like Hamas is going to I don't know, like set up a bomb at an Israeli bus stop and it's going to blow up in Seattle. I mean, I just this announcement defies all forms of logic for me. But they actually put an announcement out. They said the Seattle Police Department is closely monitoring the conflict between Israel and Iran, and we're working with local and federal agencies to ensure the safety of Seattle community members. Is there like a ton of people from Seattle that like are living in Israel? Or are they living in Iran? I don't know. As a precaution, we will proactively increase patrols around infrastructure and sensitive areas. SPD's community liaisons, that's right, they got rid of the cops and they hired community liaisons, are working with community leaders as a prevention measure. Currently, there are no specific or credible threats. Well, no shit, Sherlock. Nobody is connecting what's happening in Seattle with what's happening in Israel. Too funny. This one just baffled me, and I just thought that it would be hilarious to talk about it. All right. So this is a story that I actually have meant to discuss for the last couple of days. And today it was kind of a slow news day, I'll be honest with you. So I was able to work it in. But a couple of days ago, there was a producer, or rather he's a journalist, but he's a veteran journalist. He's been at NPR for a long time. And his name is Yuri Berliner. And he put out this piece of work where he pretty much indicted NPR for their overtly partisan bias. Obviously, they hate Donald Trump. They love anything that's diversity, equity, and inclusive. And he wrote in his piece, "An open-minded spirit no longer exists within NPR," if it ever did. "And now, predictably, we don't have an audience that reflects America." Okay. Well, it's the kind of thing that makes you think. And when you hear an NPR journalist talking about something we've brought a lot of attention to over the years, you think, hey, maybe they might have an opportunity here. Maybe they might want to learn from what their mistakes are. Well, if you thought that, you'd be 100% wrong. So, he said that NPR went sideways when Donald Trump rose to power, as what began as tough, straightforward coverage of a belligerent, truth-impaired president veered toward effort to damage or topple Trump's presidency. Now, I would take issue with the first portion of his statement, but I would certainly accept the last portion. What's more, NPR hitched our wagon to Representative Adam Schiff, who became NPR's guiding hand, its ever-present muse. How funny is that? By my count, NPR hosts interviewed Schiff 25 times about Trump and Russia. Of course, he lied through his teeth every single time. During many of those conversations, Schiff alluded to purported evidence of collusion. The Schiff talking points became the drumbeat of NPR news reports. Well, as I said, this might have been an opportunity for NPR to engage in a little bit of self-reflection. Say, hey, have we lost our way? Should we do things differently? Should we stop featuring liars and people who are actively working to destabilize America and divide the American public? That might be what a thinking person might have done. I mean, generally speaking, I mean, I don't know. I guess I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, somebody gives me a piece of criticism and I'm going to examine it. I'm going to take a look. I'm going to decide whether or not I identify with any piece of it and if there's anything I can do to be a better person as a result. Well, in this case, NPR just suspended him. They got rid of him. Senior NPR editor Andrew Berliner, or Yuri Berliner, has been suspended from public radio network he served for 25 years after sharing concerns about bias in the free press. Well, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about NPR, seems to me like Mr. Berliner is correct. There's obviously a bias, and NPR is not interested in facing it. Clearly, this is not something you should be surprised about. Here's a picture of NPR's current CEO. She's wearing a Biden for President hat. Her name is Catherine Mars. Apparently, she loves to go on X and engage in hate-filled screeds about how much she loathes Donald Trump and, of course, the modern-day American right. Marr also said over the weekend, America is addicted to white supremacy. That's the real issue. This girl's as white as it gets. She's even got her hair dyed blonde. Look at this. I mean, she couldn't be whiter if she tried. Well, I guess she could bleach those eyebrows, too. She was upset with Hillary Clinton, though, because Hillary Clinton believes that men are men and women are women. So, all right. Okay. Yeah, hanging on shifts everywhere is nothing to brag about, for sure. No, it's definitely nothing to brag about. All right, so let's talk about the Trump trial. Because yesterday, jury selection began. Last week, we went over that list of questions. I mean, it was quite clear they wanted to exclude anyone with any possible love in their heart for Donald Trump. And they didn't seem to be too worried about anybody having any overt affiliation with Joe Biden or even the American left. But yesterday, they went through 50 potential jurors and got rid of them, excused them. Now, 34 out of the original 96 jurors remain from that first pool, and the process continued today. The rapid disqualification of at least 50 possible jurors underscores the difficult reality of finding a dozen New Yorkers to form the jury in one of the most high-profile cases in the U.S. One prospective juror had this to say, "I just couldn't do it." Of the jurors who said they couldn't be fair or impartial in the case, over two dozen were white women, one was a Hispanic woman, four women were of Asian descent, 14 were white men, and one man was of Asian descent, and then six others, they were unknown. Either they didn't speak to them or they just couldn't tell by looking at them. Now, the judge also reportedly excused nine jurors after they had admitted that they could not serve, which then left the 34. The potential 34 are now going to progress onto the next stage where they fill out the questionnaire. It asks what kind of media they consume, where they live, and what are their political activities. And obviously, if you are a trans person of color and you love Joe Biden or you love Hamas and you want to make sure that America falls, well, then they're going to want you on that jury. After the questionnaire, the lawyers for both sides are then going to scrutinize the potential candidates, and then they'll likely investigate the social media profiles of these jurors, and they're going to ask some more personal questions to see if they can screen them for any additional sort of bias. Now, Trump's trial beginning yesterday with jury selection is obviously an unprecedented moment in American history, and if I had to guess, I would say that Judge Juan Marchon and DA Alvin Bragg are looking to get as liberal a New York jury as they possibly can, because these 34 felonies, any normal person would look at this case and they would say there is no case here. I mean, legal scholars across the nation are looking at this case. Legal scholars around the world are looking at this case and saying it doesn't exist. OK, Alvin Bragg is just throwing this together. It's made out of sticks and glue. Well, we've gotten some specific information about the types of jurors that Alvin Bragg is seeking to get on this jury. And I don't think anybody's going to be surprised. I mean, you saw it in the thumbnail. I mean, Alvin Bragg is looking to stack the deck against Donald Trump. And this is actually coming from one of Donald Trump's own attorneys. So Alvin Bragg himself is a Democrat. Judge Juan Marchon is a Democrat. And although the jury pool in New York is getting slimmer and slimmer in terms of Democrats, there are still some of them out there. And I'm certain that there are Democrats who would like to lie and tell the court that they could do this in an impartial manner. But truthfully, the only thing they want to do is be part of the jury that puts Donald Trump in prison. Like, remember that hoe down in Georgia? Remember her? This was from the grand jury, from Fannie Willis's grand jury. She went out and did all those interviews and stuff. So the lawyer for Donald Trump said that they are trying to find out if you've ever been involved in supporting President Trump at all over the years. But most importantly, they are not asking the same questions about Joe Biden. So what does that tell you? Well, that tells you that if you support Trump, you're not on this jury. If you haven't supported Trump, you're not on the jury. If you have supported Biden, you're going to be on the jury. So they want you to be a not Trump supporter, and they don't care who you vote for other than that. As long as you don't like President Trump, then you're the kind of person they want. Now, this is Jesse Bennell is the lawyer for President Trump, and he is involved in President Trump's January 6th case. He discussed the current criminal trial with Breitbart News. He said jury selection is going to be different in every single case. And in this case, they are basing a lot of that jury selection on these questionnaires that we read last week that they've sent out. And it's very much in favor of the prosecution. As an example, these questionnaires ask a whole bunch of questions that are meant to weed out Trump supporters. But apparently, they don't have many questions that actually focus on who might be biased against Donald Trump. Now, clearly, in an unbiased judicial system, blind justice, they should be weeding out both sides, people who would be biased against Trump and people who would be biased for Trump. What media organizations do you get your news from? They want to know. And they're looking for people who might be listening to talk radio, watching cable news shows that might be seen as favoring President Trump. They focused a lot of questions on trying to find out if you had ever been involved in supporting President Trump at all over the years. They don't ask any questions if you've been involved in supporting Joe Biden, if you watch CNN or MSDNC or you listen to NPR or you love Adam Schiff. But all of these questions might indicate that you have a political bias in some fashion and that you might be willing or want to convict President Trump in order to affect the presidential election as a juror. So when you're in a jurisdiction that was 85-15 for Joe Biden in 2020, that would be something that any potential DA or judge overseeing a trial should take into account. I mean, it's already quite obvious if we're just going on the results of the election in 2020, it would be virtually impossible to get a fair trial for the political opponent of the man who won in an election like that. Now, whether or not Joe Biden actually won in New York, that's another question for another day. But it certainly is concerning, and it's something that Trump's lawyers, I'm certain, are going to be thinking about as they're going and weeding through all of these jurors. But it's quite clear that Alvin Bragg wants to make this as difficult as possible for Donald Trump. Now, Vivek Ramaswamy on Twitter, he is not too happy about Alvin Bragg. I've talked before about Vivek Ramaswamy's unofficial position within the Trump team. He has, up until this point, well, I mean, he's been kind of quiet lately, but before, you know, he says all the MAGA things and he does, he's a little bit more outspoken on some of these things, certain issues, as President Trump was trying to navigate this, these various court cases around the country. Now, he has directly attacked Alvin Bragg. I do believe that he's doing it on behalf of President Trump and his team, because obviously there's a gag order in place. President Trump can only say so much before they're going to throw the book at him, essentially. But I'm glad to see at least Vivek is standing up for President Trump when it seems like a lot of people are not saying what I think they should be saying. There are a lot of people with a lot of power in this country, people who should have President Trump's back, people who should be up in arms about the way he's been treated, the way he is currently being treated. And it simply is unjust that he's being forced to go through this situation like this. Now, here, I'm going to go ahead and play this video.
Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg.
Well, hold on, I got to fix this.
Prosecution of Donald Trump and its trial begins today. What a joke. I'm against these prosecutions on principle. I think they're destructive to our country. But let's just examine the facts and the law here. Alvin Bragg effectively is prosecuting Donald Trump for making hush money payments, allegedly, to Stormy Daniels, and then paying Michael Cohen in a means that Alvin Bragg thinks is falsifying business records. Well, first of all, falsifying business records in New York is a misdemeanor, not a felony. And it falls outside of the statute of limitations, meaning it happened so far long ago that Alvin Bragg can't bring the case unless he charges it as a felony, which requires an underlying crime that he's advancing by falsifying those business records that was also a felony. Here's where the legal stretch really begins. That requires Alvin Bragg to say that Donald Trump's payments should have been made out of a campaign account. That's his theory of the case, instead of being made personally, or else it's a constructive campaign contribution. That's bunk. Think about it. Look, you've had smart people like former FEC Commissioner Bradley Smith, who has correctly pointed out that if Donald Trump did use campaign money, campaign contributions, to pay off hush money, that would arguably be an even stronger legal case to bring against him than the case they're bringing now. So in that version of the world, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. They're going to get him going or they're going to get him coming. It's almost as though they decided this is the person we're going to prosecute, and then we're going to figure out what we're going to charge him with after the fact.
I mean, that's exactly what they did. I mean, none of these charges, none of these cases have any real meat to them. I think that they wanted to keep President Trump spinning his wheels. They wanted to try to impugn him in the eyes of the voters. The thing is, it's not going to work no matter what they do. I think that if none of these cases are successful, they're going to try to throw something else at him a little bit later on down the line. But all it's doing is making the American people love him even more.
Well, guess what? That's exactly what happened. You have Alvin Bragg, a Manhattan DA, who was elected on the promise of going after Donald Trump. For what crime? We had no idea. Just the idea that they had to go after Donald Trump. This is a politician keeping his campaign promise. That is a bastardization of our legal system. That's not how we do things in the United States. And that motivation accounts for why this case is so weak and emblematic of the other prosecutions that have since followed against Donald Trump. I think Trump is going to prevail, but most importantly, I hope we move beyond this phase of our history where you have one political party that thinks it can use the legal system to prosecute its opponents. The same shoe can fit the other foot, and if we keep going down this direction, we're not going to have a country left. In the complete absence of a legal argument, even, to bring this case against Trump isn't just embarrassing to Alvin Bragg, it's embarrassing to our country. I hope Donald Trump not only prevails in this trial, but that we prevail as a country to move beyond this phase of our national history. That's what it's going to take to reunite and rebuild this nation.
So I think that everything we're seeing is an example in why things have to change. And I think this is why Donald Trump is not worried about any of the efforts that he's facing to take him out or destroy him. Thank you very much to Jay White 2020. He says, maybe I have 2020 PSD. You and Badlands are exposing so much. I watch all your shows. How long till the next purge? Are we ready for a real 10 days of darkness where we go one, we go all? I don't know that we're going to have another purge. I mean, I don't watch anything on YouTube anymore. So I don't, there's nowhere for us to be purged from. And the people who are controlling all of these various platforms that we're on now, I think we're safe. I think that we are now safe and we're here to stay. We are entrenched and there's nowhere for us, for them to kick us off. Thank you very much. Also, thank you very much to Brad, who I just thanked yesterday for a very generous donation. He's just sent another incredible donation on the website. Brad, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much that means to me, bro. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's incredible. It's, oh my God. Thank you, Brad. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I can say, man. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I can't believe how generous you are. Thank you very, very much. Thank you to FilterDog1 for dropping some shades. Thank you to Porpoiseful for dropping a cookie. Thank you to Liberty Bells, who says, thank you for the great shows, friend. God bless you and yours. Thank you very much, Liberty Bells. And thank you, Freedom Flyer, for the cookie as well. Brad, you are incredible, brother. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right. Now, I mentioned that Alvin Bragg wants to throw the book at Donald Trump, and this is a horrible miscalculation on his part, but I'm here for it, and Donald Trump is here for it as well. You can see in the way that despite he has these gag orders on, despite the fact that he has these gag orders, he continues to speak out. He continues to post on Truth Social. He continues to point specifically at the judge and at the district attorney. Now, Alvin Bragg is hoping he's going to be able to take Donald Trump down on some little technicality like this. So he wants to hold Donald Trump in contempt of court. He's already filed a motion for it. Now, it says that Donald Trump violated the gag order that was set by Judge Marchand. I'm not certain if it's about the judge or if it's about his daughter or if it's about Alvin Bragg or if it's just about the court himself. But if you'll remember, President Trump the other day said that he will gladly become a modern day Nelson Mandela. John and I were talking about this last night, and I'm pretty certain that Donald Trump is basically daring Alvin Bragg to throw him in jail, because if he throws him in jail, it's going to make his legend grow even more. Sterling, I'll go ahead and check it out. I don't doubt that there isn't still valuable information over on YouTube, but I'm not there because I'm working. And to be quite honest with you, I don't really watch anybody else's videos because I'm just always working. But if people send me specific videos and they tell me that there's something they want me to see in there, that's usually what I end up watching. So let's take a look at this. President Trump mentioning that he wanted to be the modern day Nelson Mandela. And they said in this motion that Trump's actions, which have included labeling Cohen as a disgraced attorney and felon, which he is, I mean, that's objectively true, in one of his posts. In another post, he referred to Judge Marchand and prosecutors as thugs, that they are. He says this represents a willful violation of the court's directives. I think it is. I literally think that President Trump is daring them to throw him in jail or to try to fine him even more money. Because every time this happens, it's just another cycle in the news, and every single mainstream media outlet is going to report on it. New York court, Alvin Bragg throws Donald Trump in jail. Judge Marchand fines Donald Trump $3,000, violating gag order. Every single time, it's just more space for Donald Trump in that newsprint, on that website, on their news feed, over and over and over again. And if you'll remember, go back to the end of the election in 2020, the mainstream media had basically acted like, yeah, we can finally start reporting on other things. We can move on. But they never did. They never stopped reporting on Donald Trump. 4 years later, and here we are. They're still talking about him. They've never stopped talking about him. Donald Trump has commanded every single news cycle, every single day, every single year since he announced that he was running for office as the president of the United States. Glenn MS says, high five, Zach. And Lisa, you may have missed this, but it appears that Trump is watching Fox News and sending truths out during the trial. I had heard that, that he was live tweeting the trial. I didn't know he was watching Fox News. That's kind of funny. So Judge Marchand has set a hearing for April 23rd to consider this request to hold President Trump in contempt. And if you'll remember, Bragg also wants to fine President Trump $1,000 for each time that he says that he broke the gag order. He also wants to force Donald Trump to remove these posts. And he says that if it doesn't stop, then he's going to throw him in prison or he's going to put him in jail. But, you know, again, if they put him in jail, they're going to have to clear out an entire wing of whatever jail they put him in. The Secret Service is going to be there with him. It's going to be a real shit show, to be honest with you. So President Trump wrote earlier today, this conflicted Trump-hating judge won't let me respond to people that are on TV lying and spewing hate all day long. He is running roughshod over my lawyers and legal team. The New York system of justice is being decimated by critics from all over the world. I want to speak or at least be able to respond. Election interference, rigged, unconstitutional trial, take off the gag order. But they're not going to. They're going to keep it right where it is. All right. So President Trump went off on Alvin Bragg President Trump went off on Judge Marchand. And obviously, this was after he had already had this motion filed against him. So now I wonder if Alvin Bragg is going to have to re-amend that motion and add this as an additional citation for President Trump supposedly breaking this gag order. Listen, we got to take a break for the second half of the show. When we come back on the other side, I got a video I want to play for you guys. We'll be right back in a moment. Warnings of a recession are growing louder as we near sell in May and go away. All signs appear to point to a sizable downturn for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ. Now, meanwhile, gold prices have been hitting all-time highs, and the rally is far from over. Now, y'all know silver is always late to the party, but once it finds momentum, it can easily outperform gold. So protect your retirement with gold or place a bullish bet on silver. Call the proud Americans of the Patriot Gold Group today before it's too late. Just mention Red Pill 78 and this show, Red Pill News, and you're always going to get best-in-class service from Patriots Protecting Patriots. Patriot Gold Group has the no-fee for Life IRA, where your IRA or 401k can be in physical gold and silver, and you just might be eligible for that no fee for life IRA on qualifying rollovers. So give them a call today at 888-857-6092 and get your free investor guide today. Patriot Gold Group is a Consumer Affairs top-rated gold IRA dealer for 7 years in a row. Call them today at 888-857-6092. And when you support my sponsors, you support this channel. All right. So I've got a video from High Res that I wanted to play for you guys. And I actually meant to open up the show with this, but I forgot. So we're going to go ahead and do it right now. Oh, man. Why is everything not working correctly? Hold on just a second. Yeah. Let me make this smaller. There we go. That'll work. That's better. All right, here we go.
It's your boy, Big Tucker.
It's your boy, Trump the Dud.
Trump the Dud.
Hey, how did I get in the studio?
Yeah. Everyone saying Russia, Russia, Russia. Fake news, no wonder no one trusts ya. The United Nation filled with suckers. The only journalist I trust is Tucker. Everyone saying Russia, Russia, Russia. Fake news, no wonder no one trusts ya. The United Nation filled with suckers. The only journalist I trust is Tucker.
They tried to stop me from interviewing Putin. The whole world lost their damn mind and they're proving. The land of the free, just not speech, just confusing. And pull up on Big T, you know that I'm shooting. I'm just a journalist getting to the truth. CNN and Fox are dead. No one cares about the news. Legacy media doesn't appeal to the youth. These politicians don't give a damn about me or you. George Stephanopoulos and Barbara Walters interview Putin and so did other reporters. But as soon as Tucker goes to Kremlin, quick, call the lawyers. Apparently, I disrupt the whole New World Order, protecting Ukraine before our own southern border. Start another foreign war so they can money launder. They want me to apologize, but I'm not sorry. The left is just mad me and Putin did karate.
Everyone saying Russia, Russia, Russia. Fake news, no wonder no one trusts ya. The United Nation filled with suckers. The only journalist I trust is Tucker. Everyone saying Russia, Russia, Russia. Fake news, no wonder no one trusts ya. The United Nation filled with suckers. The only journalist I trust is Tucker.
Hey, how did I get in the studio? Trucker, I wasn't a, why what? I was an H. I drove a truck. Tell Trucker Carlson that I drove a truck. Putin, who? Putin. My family used to live in Russia. Ireland, Russia, Irish Russia. I'm Irish Russia. I knew a Russian when I was younger. He was a bad dude. He would rub the head on my legs, this Russian man, in the back of an alleyway. Someone tell this Vladimir Crouton that he's got nothing on Scranton and Joe.
Everyone saying Russia, Russia, Russia. Fake news, no wonder no one trusts ya. The United Nation filled with suckers. The only journalist I trust is Tucker. Everyone saying Russia, Russia, Russia. Fake news, no wonder no one trusts ya. The United Nation filled with suckers. The only journalist I trust is Tucker.
All right, another banger from High Res.
Oh, hey.
Oh, hey.
Didn't see you there.
All right, here we go. Back to the news. Here's something interesting. We've been talking a lot about the divestiture from BlackRock. A lot of conservative states have been taking billions of dollars out of BlackRock's portfolio, making them just a little bit less influential around the world. So Larry Fink was on a company audio call. This was on Friday. And he kind of seemed to get a little bit frustrated about these various states pulling their money out. This is in the last month, I guess they lost $8.5 billion from the Texas Permanent School Fund withdrawing their money. Now, we know that BlackRock is used as a point of leverage for diversity, equity, and inclusion to be basically inserted into various aspects of American life. What they do is because they control so much, they have so much stock, they control parts of companies. And they also will force companies, if they want funding, to engage in these DEI activities rather than engaging in a process of meritocracy. So let's go ahead and take a listen to Larry Fink as he is discussing this problem.
I've spoken before about the fear we see today. Some of it stoked by increasingly political polarization in the world. Our industry and BlackRock have been a subject of political dialogue, mostly in the United States. We recognize some of this with being the industry leader. We have done a better job now of telling our story so that people can make decisions based on facts, not on lies and not on misinformation or politicization by others. Unfortunately, there's still others out there who put short-term politics, who continuously lie about these issues. They're putting those issues above the long-term fiduciary responsibilities. As a fiduciary, politics should never outweigh performance. I do believe that with a vast majority of our clients, our long-term fiduciary approach and performance are resonating.
Unfortunately, Larry, it's the exact opposite. I mean, how's that working out for Disney? How'd that work out for Star Wars? How'd that work out for Marvel? In fact, how did that work out for the entirety of Hollywood? They forego good stories in lieu of the message. Of sending out signals of how they want society to fundamentally change. Now, DEI is bad for business. So Larry Fink talking about fiduciary responsibility is laughable at best. You take a look at what DEI initiatives have done to companies, not only in the short term, but in the long term, in terms of their cash flow and in terms of profitability. And it's bad. Hands down, it's bad. You take a look at what DEI has done to safety, security, and to people who should have a better grasp on the jobs that they're holding. Unfortunately, people are not being chosen based upon their abilities. Take a look at Harvard and a host of other Ivy League schools, which have just been rocked by plagiarism scandals. The people who were found to be plagiarizing had been hired not because of the good jobs they were doing, but because of some other nebulous factors which were allowing them to get high marks on diversity, equity, and inclusion scores. So no, Larry Fink, your fiduciary responsibility is not working out too well, and the actions you take are not in the best interests of the companies that you serve or that you own. They're certainly not in the best interest of the people of this country. America is in a very precarious place right now, certainly economically, and in so many other ways as well. So I love seeing it, and I certainly hope that other places, states, companies will divest themselves of anything to do with BlackRock so that we can put them out of business for good. All right. Now, I think there's might at least be one person in the chat who might be really upset about this. But an Indiana National Guard member just shot an illegal alien who was found stabbing other people at the southern border. This was an illegal alien at the U.S.-Mexico border. Now, this comes from an internal Border Patrol bulletin that was obtained by News Nation. A member of the Indiana National Guard who had been sent to the border with Texas and Mexico to help secure it with the state government of Texas discharged his weapon at an illegal alien who was stabbing another illegal immigrant on U.S. soil near the edge of the Rio Grande River. The National Guard's media department responded to the shooting by releasing a statement that read, "The Indiana National Guard is aware of the incident that happened Sunday, April 14th. We support and care for our soldiers and airmen supporting Operation Lone Star." Operation Lone Star is, of course, the Texas state initiative to secure the border that the federal government under rotten Joe Biden has failed to secure. At the beginning of April, Indiana sent their guardsmen to the southern border to assist with Governor Greg Abbott and Operation Lone Star's efforts to secure the border between U.S. and Mexico and enforce federal and state laws which prevent illegal immigration along that border. If you're a leftist and you feel good about illegal aliens coming across the border, then why don't you go down there and help them cross? And then we'll see what happens. So I'm not certain whether or not this person, this illegal alien, was killed. Not certain about their status, only that he was shot and at least one other illegal alien was no longer stabbed as a result. Now, that term illegal alien seems to be divisive in America today. Not because there's anything, I guess, you know, inherently bad about it. But because it's been turned into a dirty phrase, a bad phrase, you can't say it anymore. Just like you're not supposed to say that men are men and women are women. And that if you have sex with trans women, you're probably gay. But this 16-year-old student was recently suspended after he used that term, illegal alien, in his class. Now, illegal alien is a legal terminology. You are an illegal alien if you're not a citizen of the United States and you're here illegally. Now, this 16-year-old student at Central Davidson High School in Lexington, North Carolina, was suspended for 3 days last week because he used the term illegal alien during a vocabulary assignment in English class. And the Carolina Journal has omitted the kid's name due to his minor status. They want to safeguard his privacy, which I think is a good thing. And Lee McGee is the mother of this student. She reported that the vocabulary exercise included the word alien. And trying to clarify, her son inquired, like, space aliens or illegal aliens without green cards? That's a totally justified question to ask. And he wasn't even trying to use it derisively. He wasn't even saying anything bad. Just asking a question. Can I have some clarification, my English teacher? So then that question led to a confrontation with another student. Evidently, they were triggered by the use of the word illegal alien. And it escalated to the point where the teacher then had to summon the assistant principal and bring them into the situation. So the administrative staff subsequently determined that the term, which was used by Ms. McGee's son, was offensive and disrespectful towards Hispanic classmates. Are they trying to say that every Hispanic in that class is an illegal alien? If they're illegal, then they shouldn't be here, and somebody needs to call ICE. So they suspended him. Now, in his defense, the young man stated, I didn't make a statement directed towards anyone. I asked a question. I wasn't speaking of Hispanics because everyone from other countries needs green cards, not just Hispanics. And the term illegal alien is an actual term that I hear on the news and I can find in the dictionary. This is a bit like 1984 here. They're trying to erase these words from the popular lexicon so that they can then redefine the people who are here illegally. Remember, Colorado calling them newcomers. Joe Biden just calling them migrants. So the Carolina Journal reported that this suspension could potentially tarnish the student's academic record and jeopardize his aspirations for an academic or athletic scholarship. Now, besides being a diligent student, he's also a very committed athlete. He participates in school clubs. He's in track. He's in cross country. And his mom wrote an email to local officials saying he is devastated and concerned that the racism label on his school record will harm his future of receiving a track scholarship. We are concerned that he will fall behind in his classes due to being absent for three consecutive days. Now, the really sad thing here is this kid didn't do anything wrong. I mean, this is a legitimate question that anyone could ask and would be totally justified in doing so. What's really terrible here is that they would consider putting on his permanent record, this kid's a racist. I mean, in today's world, that's enough to destroy you. Now, I wish I could say to this kid, you know, you're probably going to be okay. All right. Like, nobody looks at your permanent record. Like, that's just some bullshit that the administration tells you. Now, I was never up for an academic or athletic scholarship. So maybe it's different if you're actually going up for a scholarship or something like that. But I mean, when I applied to college, all they wanted was my grades. Okay. They never looked at anything else. And of course, the parents, they want to make sure that this kid's going to be okay. They want to clarify the situation. They want to put some type of a note in his permanent record. Maybe things are different nowadays. Maybe the administration, they have like a red flag that they put on this kid's file and they say possible racist, likely to join the KKK, likely to vote Republican. Bastards. So the family's done what they need to do. They've had to hire an attorney. They're hoping to address this situation. They want to make sure that it doesn't have any long-term negative impacts on his future or his ability to get into school when he wants to go. And there is a state senator by the name of Steve Jarvis who has reached out to the school district and the superintendent, and he's trying to work with the officials at school to get this taken care of. Now, I want to go back to the beginning of the show when I brought up those two ridiculous studies reported on by two different news outlets that both came to the exact opposite opinion. Like, how in the hell are we spending money on some junk like that? Why is it that this family has to hire a lawyer or get a state senator involved? I mean, aren't there some other problems that they could be addressing? But instead, they are forced to deal with some trivial, ridiculous stuff like this. It's completely stupid. It's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. Speaking of illegal aliens, check this out. So there is a Mexican NGO. This is a non-governmental organization operating in Mexico that is distributing flyers and instructing illegal aliens who are on their way here to the United States of America to vote for Joe Biden in the upcoming U.S. election. Never mind that illegal aliens don't have the right to vote. That's not going to stop them, I'm certain. But they are specifically telling illegals in Mexico that we need another 4 years of his term to stay open. They're going to shut down if a new administration comes in. Well, damn right. That funding, it's probably coming from the U.S. government, is no longer going to exist. So these flyers have been handed out to these illegal aliens. This is a non-governmental organization in Mexico that's been investigated by the Oversight Project. This is a watchdog group that is linked to the Heritage Foundation, which is connected to Project 2025. So these flyers have been discovered scattered around the Resource Center Metamoris, which is an establishment known for aiding in these illegals crossing over the border. Some of them were even found on the walls inside of porta potties at this location. Hang on, let's go ahead. I want to show you the actual. Well, here we go. This is the camp right here where they bring people to live. These are the porta potties, and inside here we've got the flyers. Disgusting. No, I don't speak Spanish, so we're going to have to take their word for it.
Todos con Biden.
Now, here's the thing. This non-governmental organization is one of those that I've told you about in the past that is actually linked to Alejandro Mayorkas. That's right. The current head of the DHS, Alejandro Mayorkas, the same one who is about to be tried and impeached in the Senate. Don't know if it's going to be a conviction, but there is the chance that some Democrats might actually vote for impeachment. So the founder of RCM is a person by the name of Gabby Zavala. And Gabby actually spoke with one of the journalists for Muckraker, which is the organization that discovered these flyers inside the porta potties. Now, she is trying to flood the U.S. with as many illegal aliens as possible before President Trump is reelected. RCM bills itself as an operation which houses functions for Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which helps illegals enter the United States. Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. And the Oversight Project added that Alejandro Mayorkas is a former board member of Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. They also receive millions of dollars in grants from George Soros's Open Society Foundations. They've got connections with a number of other Soros-funded nonprofits that are currently operating in the United States. I don't think it's too big of a stretch to say that they have a network designed specifically to import illegal aliens, get them set up in states all around the nation, and get them ready to vote come November. Now, new documents from Judicial Watch actually show that Mayorkas had met with these NGOs facilitating the border invasion. We had been told when a guest came on in the past that Mayorkas actually flew down there and they were part of setting up some of these migrant camps along the way so that these illegal aliens would have services to help them get all the way to the southern border. So the Oversight Project concludes, since the Biden administration opened the floodgates, 10 million illegal immigrants invaded the nation. A complex web of NGOs is facilitating the border invasion while the administration looks the other way. Meanwhile, in Mexico, a lot of Americans don't understand just how much Mayorkas is in bed with Open Borders Lobby. And it is a racketeering organization, a huge grift, which not only pays to bring these people into the states and then set them up to provide votes for Joe Biden come November, but also, I'm certain, lines the pockets of the people who are involved in these organizations. To have a board seat on the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society or organization, whatever it was, Mayorkas would be collecting a pretty big paycheck. And of course, anybody who's working at these facilities is going to be picking up a big paycheck as well. The higher you are in the totem pole, the more money you're going to be receiving from helping to destroy America. Now, Alejandro Mayorkas was back in the hot seat again today in the House getting questioned. And the question of whether or not we were doing anything to actively stop these illegal immigrants, these illegal aliens from unlawfully registering and voting come November. Well, if you ever wondered, the answer is no. In fact, Mayorkas said, we do not oversee the election enrollment process. Well, isn't that convenient? All he oversees is the importation of illegal aliens, which is why we need to get him the hell out of government. So Alejandro Mayorkas admitted that his department has no mechanisms in place to prevent these illegals from unlawfully registering and then voting in U.S. elections. It is expected that House Republicans will formally present their impeachment articles against Mayorkas today. It's been since February that he was impeached in the House by a vote of 214 to 213. This makes him the first cabinet member to be impeached in nearly half a century and the first sitting cabinet member secretary ever to face impeachment. And we've got just a little bit of movement on that. So he was also questioned by Republican North Carolina Senator Dan Bishop. He asked Alejandro Mayorkas about why the illegal immigrant that was charged in the death of Lake and Riley was allegedly paroled. If you'll remember, that was Venezuelan illegal alien Jose Ibarra, who killed Lake and Riley, a beautiful 22-year-old Georgia nursing student, on February 22nd. Now, Bishop grilled Mayorkas about why it was that Ibarra was paroled and allowed back into the United States. But when asked directly, of course, Mayorkas had no answer. Let's go ahead and watch. Oh, we got to wait for the commercial. Just got to get past the second ad.
I now recognize Mr. Bishop, the gentleman from North Carolina, and the chair of the Subcommittee on Oversight for 5 minutes of questioning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Secretary Mayorkas, you've frequently testified about the actions and efforts of DHS over the course of the time you've been secretary. Let me just ask you about the results of your more than 3 years of tenure. Do you consider the results of your administration of the Department of Homeland Security to be a success?
I am incredibly proud of the work of the men and women of the Department of Homeland Security, Congressman. They risk their lives.
You consider it to be a success?
I am incredibly proud of everything they do.
Yep. Do you consider it to be a success?
I consider them to be a tremendous success in advancing the safety and security of the American people.
Do you consider your administration of the Department of Homeland Security to be a success?
With the resources and authorities they have, they've done an extraordinary job.
In November 2022, I asked you whether you continue to maintain that the border is secure. You said yes, and it's getting more secure every day. Do you still say so?
Congressman, with the resources and the authorities that we have been provided, it is as secure as we can make it.
Under your orders, Department of Homeland Security paroled Venezuelan Jose Ibarra into the United States. He, of course, went on to a variety of crimes, culminating in beating a young woman to death in Georgia. The relevant statute grants you authority to parole aliens into the United States, quote, only on a case-by-case basis for urgent humanitarian reasons or significant public benefit, close quote. Which was it in Mr. Ibarra's case, humanitarian reasons or significant public benefit that you paroled him into the United States?
Congressman, we abide by the law. We apply our parole processes in obeyance of the law. The public safety of the American people is our highest priority, and I would be pleased to share case details with you on any case of concern to you subsequent to this hearing. I don't have the case details with me today.
Well, I'm not really asking for detail. I'm only asking for one simple fact, which is, was it urgent humanitarian reasons or significant public benefit that under your orders Mr. Ibarra was paroled into the United States?
My answer remains the same, Congressman.
You mean you would have to review something? You'd have to review something before you could provide case details, or you just can't say it?
If there's any case at all that he should have an answer to, this is the one, because it's obviously something that has captured the national attention, because this person should never have been allowed back into the United States. However, because the safety and security of the American people is not what's paramount in the minds of these individuals, especially under Alejandro Mayorkas, he didn't care. He just let him out. They just let him out. They just have a habit of just allowing these people to enter back into society, even though they have no legal right to be here in the first place.
The former.
Don't know. You don't know.
As I said, I do not have the details with respect to that individual's case, and I would be pleased to provide them to you, Congressman.
Mr. Secretary, news reports, the Heritage Foundation Oversight Project has released this document that is allegedly a flyer distributed at a non-governmental organization in Mexico called the Resource Center Matamoros, which apparently, which was said to read in part, if translated, reminder to vote for President Biden when you are in the United States. We need another 4 years of his term to stay open. I note, by the way, I understand this RCM has denied that this is authentic, but it, of course, there are competing reports about it. But let me ask you this. What actions is the Department of Homeland Security taking to ensure that, especially given the millions of illegal entries, including 2 million gotaways, that non-citizens are being prevented from registering and voting unlawfully?
Congressman, individuals who are not citizens of the United States cannot vote in federal elections.
But that's not what I asked. I asked what actions DHS is taking to ensure that that doesn't occur.
Well, two things. Number one, I believe that it is state and local election officials that monitor the eligibility of individuals. We do not oversee the election enrollment process. What we do is enforce our borders and, in fact...
So it says shorter, nothing.
In fact...
How can...
Nothing, and they also don't enforce the borders, and that's the reason he's being impeached.
People have confidence that the outcome of close elections will not turn on the votes of non-citizens who have registered and voted unlawfully.
Congressman, election security is one of our priorities in the distribution.
We just don't do anything about it.
In the distribution of federal grant funds to state and local jurisdictions, we have made election security a priority, and
okay.
We have mandated a
I'll,
minimum.
I'll reclaim my time. Last point. I'm just curious.
Shut
following
up,
Mr. Guest. You asked for less detention beds, and you explained that you did that based on the level of detention beds that would be needed under the Senate, quote, bipartisan bill. How is that bill bipartisan other than it's supported by James Lankford? Is there another Republican in the Senate or the House that supported that bill?
Congressman, we continue to support the bipartisan legislation that a group of senators worked on for months.
And my time's expired, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Gentlemen.
Time to shut up. Time to shut up because you've got absolutely nothing to say. So yesterday, Mike Lee announced that he was going to bring all business in the Senate to a halt until the Democrats hold the impeachment trial. It's an unprecedented thing, I know, but the Democrats know how to impeach somebody. We saw it twice under President Trump and even after he was no longer sitting in the White House. So Mike Lee is forcing the hand. Yesterday, he promised he's going to hold up business. So now, up until this point, it's because Chuck Schumer has refused to hold this Senate trial. Now, constitutional expert Hans von Spakovsky recently informed Grant Stinchfield and the Real America's Voice audience that holding an impeachment trial is not an option for the Democrats because it's their duty, their sworn duty under the Constitution. He said, "The Senate has a special rule that it put in place, a parliamentary rule to handle impeachments. The rule was implemented back in the 1980s, and that rule calls for a trial. There's no language in there whatsoever that simply allows a motion to dismiss and a vote to a motion to dismiss. Plus, look, the Constitution says the House votes on whether to impeach a federal official, and the Senate is then responsible for holding a trial and determining whether they are guilty or they should be acquitted. There's nothing in there about not holding a trial and simply throwing it out." So Mike Lee had this to say. "Madam President," actually, let me see if there's a video. If there's a video, we'll watch the video. Yes.
"Madam President, I rise today to speak in support of my motion to table the Ramona Manglona nomination. My issue with the nominee at hand is not with the nominee at hand. In fact, she's quite well qualified. She passed out of the Judiciary Committee, on which I serve, with my support, by a vote in committee of 21-0. The Senate should not be processing nominees right now. The Senate should be laser-focused instead on preparing for the trial for Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, whom the House impeached in February. Instead of confirming yet another nominee, we should be considering an organizing resolution to set up that trial, which we're constitutionally compelled to conduct. But unfortunately, that's not what we're doing. Instead, Senator Schumer is preparing to enact a nuclear option by tabling the articles of impeachment for the first time in American history. Senate Democrats want to avoid even examining the evidence presented against Mayorkas. We should not be going about business as usual while Senator Schumer prepares to nuke the Senate. If this motion to table is successful, then Manglona, with respect to Manglona, we could move to legislative business to consider an organizing resolution for the impeachment trial. I ask my colleagues for support. And so to that end, Madam President, I move to table the nomination of Ramona Villagomez Mangloma and ask for the yeas and nays.
So here's the thing. If they are forced to examine the evidence, there's only one conclusion that they can come to. If they come to any other conclusion than he is guilty of that which he is charged, they will be lying to the American people. Now, it's not to say that they don't have a problem lying to the American people. They do it quite often. But earlier today, finally, two counts of impeachment against Alejandro Mayorkas, which were approved a month ago, February 13th, 2 months ago, February 13th, are now formally presented to the U.S. Senate. So 11 House members had previously been named as impeachment managers. They're going to walk from the lower chamber through the statuary hall in the Capitol and then to the Senate in a brief ceremony that's been repeated only 17 times since the first Congress in 1789. House Democrats, of course, did it twice after impeaching Donald Trump back in 2020 and in 2021. So they're very familiar with it. They know exactly how this process is supposed to work. 8 of the 17 Senate impeachment trials have resulted in convictions. 9 of them ended without convictions. A 2/3 majority of the Senate is required to convict an impeached officer of the federal government. Neither President Donald Trump, former President Bill Clinton back in 1998, nor President Andrew Johnson in 1868 were convicted. Now, the Senate rules require that the House managers read the two counts in the Senate chamber. Then the Senate president pro tempore, who is Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington, will then swear the senators in as jurors. A written summons will then be issued to Mayorkas for him to appear, which he may or may not choose to heed. Something tells me he's not going to bother to show up. And then the senators have an opportunity to adopt rules governing exactly how the trial will be conducted. The rules that were conducted by the Senate back in 1986 were in place for the Clinton and the Trump trials. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to then enter a motion either to dismiss or table the two impeachment counts against Mayorkas. Earlier this year, he already said he was going to table it. We'll see what happens. Of course, there's a lot of anger in America. We've had somewhere between 10 and 12, maybe 20 million illegal aliens that have been allowed to enter this country. 10 million for sure that have had contact with federal officials. All under the careful watch of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. All of these illegals are here for one reason and one reason only. They were invited illegally by a man who sits illegally in the White House in Washington, D.C. Now, Chuck Schumer has already said he does not want a public trial. He does not want the House managers to come in and even present the evidence to them. And of course, he wants Alejandro Mayorkas to continue doing the job that he's really not doing. He just wants him to sit there in that office and allow illegals to come across the border. Senate Republicans, led by a couple of conservatives, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, John Kennedy, Ron Johnson, Eric Schmidt, Roger Marshall, all of them are going to bring multiple points of order against Mr. Schumer's motion to table. And if any one of the GOP points of order is approved by a simple majority of the Senate, the motion will then be defeated and the trial will commence. But Ms. Murray, the pro tempore speaker, is not obliged under the Senate rules to recognize any of the senators offering the points of order, so none of their objections may be heard on the Senate floor. Now, if this trial does go forward, those House managers are then going to present their evidence, and the defenders of Mr. Mayorkas, who are, of course, among the Senate Democratic majority, they get a chance to respond. At some point thereafter, they're going to take a roll call vote. It's expected to fail to reach the required two-thirds for a conviction. But you never know. They might surprise you. At that point, Mr. Mayorkas is going to be able to continue performing his duties. He's going to go down in the history books, though, as being only the second presidential candidate member to ever be impeached, and with good reason. The very first one was Secretary of War William Belknap. He resigned in 1876 after the House passed five counts of impeachment against him. Of course, at that time, the Senate failed to convict Belknap, and he was appointed by President Ulysses S. Grant. Now, Article 1 of the measure that is accusing Alejandro Mayorkas of being derelict of duty, committing willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, I'd say that's objectively true. It also claims that in large part because of his unlawful conduct, millions of illegal aliens have illegally entered the United States on an annual basis, and many unlawfully remain in the United States. I would love it if they would have included in there how many Americans have died as a result of these illegals coming into the United States and committing heinous acts of violence against them. His refusal to obey the law is not only an offense against the separation of powers in the Constitution of the United States, it also threatens our national security and has had a dire impact on communities across the country. Now, in Article 2, it accuses Mayorkas of breaching the public's trust by having knowingly made false statements, and he has. And knowingly obstructed lawful oversight of the Department of Homeland Security, which he has. Also, principally, he's attempted to obfuscate the results of his willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law. The impeachment resolution is about 20 pages. It contains both of those articles and multiple examples of the laws exactly as Mayorkas is alleged to have ignored or refused to enforce those laws. And it's got a number of illustrations of his attempts to block congressional oversight. That includes not producing the requested copies of documents as requested by Congress. Now, the managers of this impeachment are, of course, all Republicans. They include Mr. Green, the House Affairs Committee chairman's Representative Mike McCall of Texas, and Andy Biggs of Arizona, Clay Higgins of Louisiana, Ben Klein of Virginia, Michael Guest of Mississippi, Andrew Garbarino of New York, August Pfluger of Texas, Harriet Hageman of Wyoming, and Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia. Don't forget Laurel Lee of Florida. So again, if they take a look at the evidence, then it's patently obvious that Alejandro Mayorkas is in violation of his duties. He has flagrantly and willfully ignored the laws of the United States of America. He has failed to enforce the laws under his role as the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. And you've got many, many problems all across the country. Take a look, as an example, at Colorado. Now, in the absence of the federal government upholding the laws, as we have said, it is up to local jurisdictions to pick up the slack. Texas, they've got their National Guard. They've got the National Guards of other states at the border as well. Well, in Colorado, you've got two separate counties that have now filed a lawsuit challenging the state of Colorado's sanctuary state laws, and they argue that they are unconstitutional, which they are, and they are exacerbating the state's immigration crisis, which they are as well. Yesterday, we talked about the state of Denver, the state of the city of Denver, how they are defunding police and fire and local city services so they can continue to house, feed, clothe, and provide job placement assistance to illegal aliens. Now, attorneys from both El Paso and Douglas counties where these lawsuits have been filed, these are localities that are just south of Denver. The lawsuit was filed on Monday, and it seeks to strike down that Colorado sanctuary city laws that largely are impeding local officials and law enforcement agencies from being able to work with federal immigration enforcement authorities. Both of the laws that have been passed, House Bill 19-1124 and House Bill 23-1100, were signed into law by the current governor of Colorado, Democrat Governor Jared Polis. And he has been a major critic of ICE in recent years. El Paso and Douglas County officials are arguing that the state constitution forbids interference with a local government's ability to work with federal authorities. The laws enacted by the Colorado House, both 19-1124 and 23-1100, are illegal. They're unconstitutional. They violate the intergovernmental relationships, the distribution of powers, and revival, amendment, or extension of laws provisions of the Colorado State Constitution, and are otherwise preempted by federal immigration laws and regulations. Now, specifically in House Bill 191124, it prohibits local police from handing information over to ICE. And then House Bill 231100 prohibits localities from entering into intergovernmental agreements with federal authorities for civil immigration enforcement. And both of these laws together make it much more difficult for local jurisdictions to work with ICE agents, and it stops them essentially from being able to operate within the state of Colorado. Now, although the laws are unconstitutional, that's not all that they are talking about. Both the plaintiffs are arguing that they are making the national immigration crisis worse for Colorado, and I would argue for the rest of the nation. The capital city, Denver, is currently facing quite a bit of financial hardship due to that large influx of illegal aliens that are arriving and, of course, are holding their hand out for governmental services. The national migrant crisis has forced Denver to continue to cut local services for residents. It's making their quality of life worse on a day-by-day basis. Now, I would argue, and the plaintiffs argue, that Colorado and the local jurisdictions have an obligation first to their citizens. They have an obligation to the people who are legally living in those places. And you see what's happening to Denver. It's a giant flashing neon sign, a warning for local jurisdictions to be proactive. Otherwise, all of that illegal activity is going to spill right on down to Douglas County. Now, unfortunately, since the federal government has refused to take action at the border, this action by Douglas and El Paso is now necessary for the preservation of public welfare, health, and safety of those local communities. And Denver, as we mentioned yesterday, has recently announced it's going to spend another $90 million on services for illegal aliens seeking to resettle into this area. That money, the only way to get it is to reduce city services from other crucial areas, such as the $8.4 million that they're going to be taking, defunding from the Denver Police Department. Right now, they've got more than 15,700 illegal aliens that have entered into Denver just in the last year alone. And largely, that's a result of Governor Greg Abbott bussing them over because Colorado said, hey, we want them. Send them in. And of course, if it wasn't for the Biden regime failing to uphold their duties to enforce immigration laws at the federal level or to protect the southern border as they should be justified to do under the current laws and rules of the United States of America, well, then it wouldn't be necessary to bus those illegal aliens all the way up to Colorado. Douglas County Sheriff Darren Weekly said the most critical role of government is to protect its citizens. God, that is like so fundamental. I believe this action is absolutely necessary to allow law enforcement to work with our federal partners to keep all of Colorado safe. Now, here's the thing. If Douglas and El Paso County are successful essentially having these laws deemed as unconstitutional and therefore illegal, it's going to open up the gates for every other local jurisdiction in the state of Colorado to work directly with ICE and immigrations to ensure that illegal aliens are not settling in, that if they know where illegals are, they can go ahead and arrest them, hand them over, or they can just give information about where ICE can come to find these people. It's something that is sorely needed, and we need a lot more of it happening all around the country. Now, if it wasn't bad enough that we've got illegals flooding in to every single state in the nation, a lot of them are bringing with them drugs and many other illegal activities that come with this sort of, population. So the House Select Subcommittee on China earlier today revealed in a brand new report that the CCP is using tax rebates to subsidize the manufacturing and exportation of fentanyl chemicals. These are precursors that are then used to create the synthetic opioid fentanyl. They said through subsidies, grants, and other incentives, the People's Republic of China harms Americans while at the same time enriching PRC companies. This is a tremendous security and health failure on behalf of the United States government. This is combined with new evidence that establishes that the People's Republic of China incentivizes the export of illegal drugs abroad, and they take ownership stakes in companies that are doing the same. It casts doubt on the veracity of the PRC's claims that it will act to stem the massive export of illicit fentanyl materials and other dangerous synthetic narcotics. There are others, but fentanyl is the one you hear about the most. And it reinforces the need for global cooperation and communication between law enforcement agencies. Now, this is a stark reminder of the fact that the Biden regime has failed spectacularly to counter the illicit drug market that is fueled by Chinese chemical companies and then exacerbated by Mexican drug cartels that are producing these drugs and then bringing them straight into the United States of America, turning entire neighborhoods in places like Philadelphia into virtual zombie wastelands. Now, Biden's disastrous open border policies have even more so allowed for the unrestricted flow of these illegal drugs into the United States of America so that they can be pumped into the arms and the noses of American citizens that are suffering from the addiction to opiates. And this report suggests that the government needs to take some action. They need to put together a task force to counter global fentanyl supply chains. Something tells me that's not going to happen under Joe Biden. So unfortunately, we need to continue working to fix this at a local level. These chemicals, these drugs are going to come in no matter what, as long as Joe Biden is sitting in Washington, D.C., as long as Alejandro Mayorkas is running the Department of Homeland Security, as long as they are the ones who are setting the tenor for how the drug and the illegal migration problem are going to be handled. Right now, they're not being handled at all. And I go back once more to the concept of kickbacks and grifts. These people are most likely profiting off of the suffering and the death of American citizens. This is the worst drug epidemic we've had in American history. And at times in the past where drugs have gotten to be too much, the United States government has worked to counteract it. But then at the same time, the Central Intelligence Agency was just making it worse by sending drugs into various parts of the United States that were, of course, disadvantaged. Do you know anyone with Biden derangement syndrome, even one? No, nobody has a Biden derangement syndrome. No, people don't like Joe Biden simply because he's bad for America. There is nothing deranged about disliking Joe Biden. I mean, it's objective fact. His presence in Washington, D.C. has been universally bad for the United States of America and for the people who live here. There is there's no need for a BDS diagnosis. Now, take for an example, it's not just drugs, it's human trafficking. And it's a lot of other crime that comes with this illegal population. An entire neighborhood in New York City, which, of course, is also overrun with illegal migrants as a result of their sanctuary city policy, has basically been turned into an open air drug market. You've got illegal aliens selling goods. You've got a lot of stolen activity. So they're robbing people and they're coming here to this open air market and they're selling all of their stuff. Prostitution, illegal alien females are selling their bodies on the street corner. And of course, this is not good for the safety, security and longevity of America. Certainly not good for the people of New York City, I'll tell you that. But as a result of this, locals are complaining. I mean, they want police to get these illegal vendors out. New York has some very strict laws on people selling things on the street. If you're a New Yorker, if you're a real citizen of the United States and you want to sell something on the side of the road or on a bridge or just out in public, you got to have a permit. Apparently, they're not doing the same thing for the illegals. And certainly, the illegal women who are out there selling that ass, they're definitely not worrying about any permits for them either. But remember, prostitution is still illegal in New York City. So this is a stretch of Jackson Heights. I'm not certain exactly what part of New York that is, but Kick Dreaming, maybe you can tell us about Jackson Heights. It's allegedly deteriorated to the point that it's just become an illegal alien shopping district. Completely unchecked, the police don't go there. Open air market where everything from women to stolen goods to drugs can all be found. This is Roosevelt Avenue near 91st Street, and it's littered daily with illegal alien vendors hawking goods that they've ripped off from American shopkeepers just a couple of doors down. Prostitutes proposition passerbys at all hours. Frustrated merchants and residents say they are helpless to do anything about it. They're hopeless about the situation. Milton Raines, who manages Mi Farmacia Pharmacy just down the street, he says it's relentless. You should see it on Saturdays. It's so heavy you can't even step on the sidewalk. There's a lot of doctor's offices around here, and my customers don't even want to get dropped off. I'm not faulting the police, Reyes said, but they will come by and they pick up a few of them. But as soon as the police car pulls away, they start moving back. 20 minutes later, they're all set up again like nothing happened. This, my friends, is the effect of unrestricted illegal alien migration coming into so-called sanctuary cities. Undoubtedly, the illegal population is going to push out the natural, legal American citizens. They don't just enrich neighborhoods or bring in good-tasting foreign food. No, they destroy the economy, and they completely upend the natural balance of the way things are supposed to work. Now, I'm going to end today with a bit of discussion about Mike Johnson. Jim Kyle says, I remember back in the 70s, the hookers running up and down Fifth Avenue. Go figure, nothing's changed. Yeah, well, you know, for a while there it did. I mean, New York used to be real bad. You know, they locked it down. Rudy Giuliani cleaned it up. So it's not impossible. It's just everything old is new again, I guess. Yeah, that's right. When we went to Vegas, yeah, you had ladies or even lots of illegals, I assumed at the time. They certainly didn't appear that English was their first language, but they're handing out hooker cards. And Lisa's like, drop it. You don't need to keep that. And I'm like, no, I don't. I know I don't need to keep that. So Mike Johnson has announced that he has changed his mind on funding the Ukraine war. He thinks we need more money there. Allegedly, there was a budget that Mike Johnson had proposed for this, I suppose you might call it a bipartisan foreign aid plan. Listen to this. So Speaker Johnson wants to send more money into Ukraine. And I mentioned yesterday, I mean, I've mentioned it many times before, but a lot of this plan surrounding Ukraine, obviously there are people who are making money along the way, politicians, dignitaries, you know, American and Ukrainian oligarchs. But it's all about maintaining the military-industrial complex, a low-grade military conflict where people are just kind of fighting all the time, where it's not like a full-scale foot invasion. It allows for these American arms manufacturers to continue producing weapons of war. And Mike Johnson said it. He said, those are American jobs that build upgraded weapons and ammo here. So Mike Johnson has just said the quiet part out loud. We're going to keep the war in Ukraine going so that we can continue to supply work to Americans. But you see, all of those billions of dollars that we send there, is it worth the money that they're being paid to produce those weapons? Tell you what, Americans also want to buy bullets so that they can go target shooting. There are also all kinds of things that Americans could be doing that make our lives better, where people don't die as a result of those things being produced. But unfortunately, so many of those industries have been shipped overseas as a result of these globalist policies by apparently people just like Mike Johnson. So he was asked, what is the planned land Republicans who say they're hearing from constituents and have a real problem with it funding for Ukraine? What if the bill is carried by Democrats? How do you approach that? Apparently, Mike Johnson needs the support of Democrats to be able to pass this through. These are the numbers. Let's see. Mike Johnson, he wants to push through another $95.34 billion. Roughly 60% of it would go directly into the DIB, something to do with defense. Ukraine would get $48.43 billion. That's nearly $20 billion for the replenishment of stocks to the Department of Defense. About $15 billion for Department of Defense ops in UCOM AOR. I don't know. That's some acronym for something happening over there in Europe. About $14 billion for USAI for Ukraine to purchase U.S. weapons. So we're going to give Ukraine $14 billion so they can basically purchase our guns from us. And then you've got another $8 million for IG. And then another $8 billion directly to support the Ukrainian government. We're paying the salaries of Ukrainian government ministers. These people can't run their own shit. And so we're paying them to just continue spinning their wheels. Oh, there's another $14.1 billion for Israel, another global conflict that we're supporting on both sides of the aisle. You got $4 billion for their missile defense shield. That's the Iron Dome and David Sling. You got $1.2 billion for Iron Beam. I think that's a laser-guided thing. You got $4 billion for replenishment of stocks to the Department of Defense. $3.5 billion in FMS for Israel to purchase U.S. weapons. So same deal. We're going to give them nearly $4 billion so they can just turn around and buy our guns from us. And then another $800 million for ammunition plant improvements. And then there's also Red Sea operations. I think that's like Yemen and such. $2.4 billion. That's going to be used for operations, force protection, and the replacement of combat expenditures. And then you got another one called Indo-PACCOM. So Indo, I would imagine that's like, you know, somewhere in Asia. That's nearly $2.6 billion, $1.9 billion replenishment of stocks to the DOD, $542 million for Indo-PACCOM UPL, $133 million to enhance cruise missile components, and then submarine industrial base, another $3.3 billion. That's investment in dry dock construction, et cetera. In support of SIB and AUKUS, AU maybe Australia. So let me just ask this question. I mean, what happened to the budget that they pushed through previously? I mean, why didn't they account for everything that was needed at that time? I mean, obviously, we've got these brand new wars and the neocon war hawks like apparently Mike Johnson want to make sure that those wars continue. So that the money keeps flowing, because the only industry that America basically is successful in at this point, it would appear, is death and war in other nations. I wonder how much fighting these countries would continue to engage in if America turned off the money spigot, if we stopped sending money to these other nations so that they could continue fighting each other. Now, he didn't put anything about Iran in there, but obviously we are also propping up Iran. That's probably being done through the CIA. But let's take a listen to Mike Johnson talking about this brand new Ukraine foreign aid package that he can only pass if he gets the support of the Democrats, which he might have.
What's this plan? Republicans who say they're hearing from constituents and have a real problem with any funding for Ukraine.
Well, listen, the Ukraine piece is clearly on the Republican side, the most controversial one, I think, the one that has the most difference of opinion. I think there's an idea that lethal aid is different than the humanitarian aid. If you convert some of this economic assistance to a loan, that makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. But I think the American people deserve to have it explained to them why it is in America's interest to assist here. Importantly, 68% of this package is the replenishment of our own munitions, our own weapons. Those are American jobs that build upgraded weapons and ammo here. And so a lot of those things need to be explained. They need to be analyzed independently. And I think that we will probably do that here in this legislation and make it clear to people that what exactly they're voting for and why. I think that's really important for the American people.
Aside from the separate bills, how does this legislation differ from what the Senate has already passed?
Well, the underlying text will have some of our innovations in it with regard to accountability for the funding and some of these other measures. We've talked a lot about the loan concept and for Ukraine, certainly on that piece, that will be a part of that. I think that you'll see the text differs in those ways, but the overall concept is the same. It's the same places that the funding would be sent, and you'll see the House's take on it. That's how this process works. These are two separate chambers. I can't be responsible for what happens in the Senate or how they do their business. My responsibility is the House of Representatives, and we're going to do that.
I want to know what they have on Mike Johnson, because he has completely turned into a different person. I mean, he is Kevin McCarthy 2.0, essentially. And I know that you've said this before, Cass, but what is LFA? This is another channel or something? I don't know anything about it. I mean, I remember you talking about it before, but and yes, it looks like Vector said I was right about Australia, US, UK, etc. Indo-Pacific Command. Okay, thank you, Vector. Yeah. So yes, blackmail. Exactly, Vector. Blackmail. What do they have on Mike Johnson? They got to have something. It's got to be bad. It's got to be real bad, because I mean, he's talking about the wants and desires of the American people. And he knows this is not popular with the American people. The American people are sick and tired of the United States of America funding death and destruction all around the world for the sake of death and destruction. We don't need to be engaged in endless wars constantly, over and over again. Fighting, killing, bombing, paying money just so we can get money back for the stuff that we made. This is completely unnecessary. But of course, the United States people, they have no say in their own government any longer. I mean, otherwise, Mike Johnson would be listening to the American people. Congress would be listening to the American people. Alejandro Mayorkas and the DHS would be protecting the American people. Now, somebody mentioned something about LFA, it's another channel. Oh, don't worry. I can't join any more channels. Yeah. I'm going to be on my own channel, and I'm happy to work with Badlands, but you know, obviously this is my main gig right here. I can't take on any more responsibilities. But somebody mentioned if Mike Johnson resigns. Mike Johnson, I don't think he's going to have to resign. Now, Ivan made this interesting comment the other day, and I don't think I agree with him, but he said that Marjorie Taylor Greene is looking to vacate the chair again, as Matt Gaetz did with Kevin McCarthy, at the behest of Kevin McCarthy, at which point they would bring in Hakeem Jeffries. And now it's a tenuous position that we're in, because we've only got a majority of one vote right now. So in order to choose another speaker, it would be very, very difficult. Republicans would have to be united behind someone that they would choose. At this point, I don't trust a single one of them. I'll be real honest with you. I don't. I think that there are some good people there. Okay. Thomas Massie. I like Thomas Massie. But I'm not so certain that I agree with Ivan that Marjorie is working with Kevin McCarthy to unseat Mike Johnson and bring in Hakeem Jeffries as revenge. I don't know about that one. Could be, but I don't know. But Mike Johnston is now being backed to be removed by Thomas Massie. He's going to be joining forces with her. And Johnson can only afford to lose one GOP vote because of that slim majority. So if they actually file this motion to vacate the chair, then Johnson is out. Now, I've said before, I don't care if Congress has to try to find somebody else until November, because they do nothing for the American people anyways. I think Hakeem Jeffries as Speaker of the House, it would be bad, clearly. But is it really going to be that much worse than what we have already? Johnson's already voting with Democrats. He's already getting shit passed through because he can't get it supported in his own party. And with Marjorie Taylor Greene filing for the vacation of the chair, to vacate the chair, then Johnson would be gone. I mean, they've got that rule, and it's there for a reason. So my question now becomes, if Massey works with Marjorie Taylor Greene to get Johnson out of there, you know, who's going to come next? I mean, what is the plan that they have to bring him in? Now, I think there's a couple of people who would be good choices, but I don't know that those people could get the support they need. Brain Stranigan says, riddle me this. Bongino today said monitoring stock trades included in the new FISA bill. Good or bad thing, long run, short run? Oh, I think that monitoring stock trades for the American people or for Congress. I think that the more that the intelligence community is watching us, it's bad. If they are monitoring foreign stock trades, then I'm okay with that. If they're monitoring Congress's stock trades, here, as an example, this goes back to my discussion a few minutes ago about the perpetuation of the military-industrial complex. Did you guys know that there were a ton of congressmen who, just before October 7th, bought a ton of defense contractor stock? It's almost like they knew that there was going to be an attack in Israel on October 7th. Huh. Wasn't that weird? You know, I mean, like, some of these congressmen, I mean, they've got incredible skills when it comes to buying stock. And it's not luck, all right? Obviously, they're working with lobbyists on a daily basis. They're getting inside information. We've already talked about the people of Israel. I mean, they got the short end of the stick on that deal because somebody inside the Israeli government, the Israeli military, whoever it was, they allowed for the Iron Dome to be penetrated. They allowed for goat herders to jump across a fence on parachutes and kill as many people as possible and then take hostages, okay? Somebody knew that that attack was coming, and people in Congress profited off of it. So is FISA watching Congress's stock trades, or are they watching our stock trades so that they can stave off another AMC or another GameStop or something like that? Yeah. Who are they watching? That's my question. So in general, if the intelligence community is watching the American people, I don't like it. But at this point, I feel like it would be naive to say that they're not already watching everything we're doing. Yes, they all should go to jail. They're all corrupt. This is such a daunting task, guys. There are so many people who are in the American government who are captured, who are blackmailed, who are part of the effort to destroy America. They may not think that America is going to necessarily be destroyed, but certainly they're willing to profit as much as they possibly can along the way. Yes. Okay. Didn't Congress get it written into FISA reauthorization that they were? Yes, they did. They did. They included a cutout for themselves. If the FBI is looking at them, then they have to come and tell them. Now, does that mean they will? I don't trust it. I don't think so. You know, it's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, but it's being used against American citizens. I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted that they passed it through in its current incarnation. You know, Congress, that's all they wanted was protection for themselves. Again, because the American people don't mean a thing to them. These people are all traitors, every single one of them, traitors. All right, now here's some good news. The Supreme Court has ruled that Idaho can enforce their ban on sex changes for children. And any healthcare professionals who mutilate children can get up to 10 years in prison. Amen. Hallelujah. Finally, some good news. So if this is now legal in the state of Idaho, then it can be legal in other states around the nation as well. So now other states, using the Supreme Court decision, can outlaw the mutilation of children, and they can put surgeons in prison for doing it. Back in December, Judge Lynn Windmill, who was a Clinton appointee, had ruled that Idaho could not enforce this transgender ban while the lawsuit and two plaintiffs made its way through the court. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court granted a 6-3 emergency request that was filed by the Attorney General of Idaho. Now, they had previously enacted something called the Vulnerable Child Protection Act, which specifically protected children from dangerous puberty blockers and from procedures that remove body parts. So activists, far left activists in the state of Idaho, had sued to stop this act from being enforced. And Idaho's attorney general acted pretty quickly and appealed it to the Ninth Circuit. After the Ninth Circuit denied the request, the AG's office then appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court because they wanted the law to take effect and they wanted the case to make its way through the courts. So the attorney general is now celebrating this win. It's not just a win for the attorney general. It's a win for children. It's a win for one of the most vulnerable segments of American society. He said, our state has a duty to protect and support children. Isn't it beautiful to hear that? Because it sure seems like most people don't feel that way anymore. I'm proud to defend Idaho's laws and ensure children are not subjected to these dangerous drugs and procedures. So now that it's been ruled on by the Supreme Court, be looking to see this happening in other states. ZBM says, my state, cool beans. Oh, speaking of transgenders, sex offender from Wisconsin who identifies as a transgender vampire and had already been convicted of sexually assaulting a disabled minor has now been charged with homicide. If there's anything you need to know, it's going to be in this story right here. They are a transgender vampire. It's a man by the name of Adam who goes by Sabrina Hetke, Adam Hetke. He's 35. He was convicted just last week of first-degree sexual assault by threatening the use of a dangerous weapon and second-degree assault of a mentally ill victim for an attack on a 16-year-old developmentally disabled girl. This is as heinous as it gets, guys. Lee Walden says, we pray for the awakening and demand the reckoning where divine justice prevails, and that includes Gitmo. Hallelujah. So, Hetke was already a registered sex offender. He got out of prison back in November of 2020. Now, according to the complaint, Hetke met with this 16-year-old girl who had cognitive disabilities at a Waukesha gas station on July 6th of 2021. So this is 3 years ago. She was, holy shit, she was 13 at the time. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Okay, no, she was 16 at this time. So now she's going to be 19. Okay. They went to her nearby home, and he allegedly sexually assaulted her while keeping a knife nearby and threatening to use it before she jumped out of a bedroom window. Victim A said the defendant told her that he was a vampire and that he would bite her if she didn't do what he wanted. So now Hetke was sentenced for that sexual assault on June 7th. He's now facing homicide charges in Milwaukee for the April 2021 death of Vidale Thompson Moody, 28, who also had a cognitive disability. I guess this guy had a type. Hetke told Milwaukee police the victim in that case was possessed by a demon and began stabbing himself in the chest with tongs. Hetke said he was able to exorcise the demon, but the demon then caused the victim to wrap a cord around his neck and pull the ends. Now, one witness said he was scared of Hetke. He also went by the name Morrigan, and he claimed she could inject demons into people's bodies. Hetke told the witness that he could inject people's bodies with demons. I killed him. God can't bring him back, but I can because I'm the devil, Hetke said, according to the complaint. This guy's obviously mentally ill. Prison is where he deserves to be. Scott LF says, when the Dems take over the House in the next month, Jeffries will try and make a law Trump can't run, or when the election happens, the House will nullify Trump's win. Either way, we lose. Well, that's if Jeffries becomes the Speaker of the House. And even if he becomes, well, if he becomes the Speaker of the House, then he gets a, there really is like no good answer here. So either we just let Johnson keep doing what he's doing. This is, Yeah, I don't know. It's so up in the air. But yes, that's what Ivan said, is that they would try to pass some law to stop Trump from becoming president. And wow, I guess I don't know what the answer is on this one, bro. Like, I am beyond frustrated with the possibilities that could come from any of these circumstances. They've got us basically pushed into a corner between a rock and a hard place. Hey, Tilly, good to see ya. Thank you very much, Scott. All right. We're going to end it there, guys. We're going to end it there because I've got to get ready. I've got a couple of shows I have to record tonight so that I've got content to play for you while I'm at GART this weekend. I'm also going to be recording my episode of Altered State with Brad tonight. So thank you very much, everybody, for being here. Let me go through these thank yous over here. Who Cares says that Freedom Flyer, thank you for the cookie. Who Cares says Mayorkas trial starts in the Senate at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Tomcat, thank you for the cookie. Good Work Gal, thank you for the cookie. Filter Dog says, will the Senate move forward with the impeachment of Mayorkas? Yes, they are doing so tomorrow. Freedom Flyer, thank you for the cookie. Nakaz, thank you for the shades. Porpoiseful, thank you for the cookie. Father Larry says, I live in Colorado. I just call them criminals. That's good, yeah. Hogleg71 says, keep up the good work, Zach. Thank you, Hogleg. Sean Joe, thank you for the can and the cookie. Filter Dog 1 says, where's Hunter? Hunter is trying to avoid prison at this point. He's not going to make too many public appearances. Filter Dog, thank you also for the cookie. Sean Joe, thank you for the cookie. Porpoiseful, thank you. Thank you to Filter Dog and Sean Joe. Good Work Gal says, prayers to you and Lisa. Appreciate you both so much. Thank you very much, Good Work Gal. And then Sean Joe and Judy the Lady Pug, thank you for the cookies as well. All right, you guys. I'm just throwing my hands up at this point. Maybe call your congressman. Thank you, Snowcat Operator on Ko-Fi. Call your congressman and tell them that if they're going to try to remove Mike Johnson, they need to have a plan in place, because if they get Hakeem Jeffries in there, then that's all bets are off. Mo 1959, faith in God is the answer. It's the only answer, to be perfectly honest with you. It always has been, and it always will be. Mugga Q says, I don't believe the mentally ill belong in prison. Prison does nothing for them. Having a son who deals with mental illness. Well, here's the thing, though. Not all mentally ill people are going to rape disabled 16-year-old girls and then kill another disabled person. That is very, very different. I mean, mental illness is almost synonymous with criminal activity now. I mean, psychopaths, sociopaths, I mean, that is a form of mental illness. But I would argue that nobody is rehabilitated in prison. All right. Prison is basically a holding cell. If you kill someone, I really feel that you should be put away for life. I mean, because clearly somebody like that has a mental illness. But there are plenty of mentally ill people who are never going to kill and rape a disabled 16-year-old girl. So, yes. Okay, yes. He's not mentally ill. He's a killer. Well, I mean, yeah. All right. I'll go with it. I'll go with it. All right, you guys. Red Rum K41 says, hello, Zach. I got here from your show with John. Well, thank you very much for being here. Check out the rest of the channel. There's shows Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. and then Friday and Saturday at 9 p.m. I'm going to pass out these gold pills, and then I'm going to take the dogs for a walk and get back to work. So I will be here tomorrow at 5 p.m., but there will be no Red Pill News on Thursday. There will be a show on Friday night, but no show on Saturday night. There may be a show on Saturday. I haven't figured that one out yet. If I can go live, like, you know, during the day on Thursday, then I will, just to come say hi. But expect for me to not be doing a regular show at 5 p.m. on Thursday. And definitely I will be here tomorrow at 5. Good luck. God bless. Keep the faith. That's all we can do. Pray.